Just so you know, I tried to get a big drink of water just a minute ago, and my water bottle leaked on me. So I do know that there's something funny about my shirt, but it'll go away in a moment. I'm overwhelmed by what I experienced last night with about half of our congregation and over 600 people. Over 600 people marched yesterday. Over 600 people in Wimberley. I saw not one sour face on the sidelines. I saw nothing but love, nothing but support, tons of kids, tons of children. My own child helped carry the banner. And man, it was amazing. There were horses. There was a guy in a whole suit of armor. I don't know why. On a great big horse with a lot of metal on, and it was hot, and he was carrying a flag, and it was like cool. And so it was, wow, it was just so, it was so happy. I had a hard time going to sleep last night because I thought maybe we've crossed a threshold, because last night there was something organic and perfect. And one of those moments that if you tried to recreate it, you probably wouldn't be able to do it, but it happened because it needed to happen. It happened because we were all ready for it to happen. And thank you for helping us make it happen. Wow. It was beautiful. I couldn't go to sleep till about 2. Because I couldn't come down from that energy. And we were not the only church that marched. So that's pretty cool. So, of course, the talk today is about generosity. And we saw it in spades last night. If generosity is having a positive regard for another. If that's one definition of generosity, there was plenty of positive regard for everybody. So we're coming to the end of our Brené Brown series, and she defines generosity as extending the most generous interpretation possible to the intentions, words, and actions of others. Just think about that for a moment. Extend, yes, it is big, and I'm actually going to use that word in just a moment. You extend the most generous interpretation possible to the intentions, words, and actions of others. The assumption of generosity is believing that people are doing the best they can. We'll come back to that in a minute, because you're either going to have a reaction that says, well, yes, that's true, or you're going to say, I don't believe that's true, that people are doing the best they can at any given moment. We're going to circle back around to that, too. So if we're living big, B-I-G, big, this is what we've been talking about already. We have boundaries, we have integrity, and we have generosity. So the boundaries are, who am I? What will I allow in my life? How am I behaving? How am I allowing other people to treat me? What are my values? And that goes right into integrity. Am I living my highest truth all the time, as much as I'm able? And then generosity, that positive regard. You know, if you're extending that to other people, then that generosity is going to also come out in the gifts that you give to others of your time, your talent, your treasure. It's going to be an insurance policy, if you will, that generosity is going to come back to you as well. Maybe not in the same place with which you gave it, but it will come to you. You know, there's something in the Bible about sowing in fields in which you do not reap. Sorry, reaping in fields in which you did not sow. Sorry, I knew I was going to get that backwards. Reaping in fields in which you did not sow. So I'm just going to go ahead and talk about this. There are certain places in which you pay good attention to whether or not your generosity and your expectation about that generosity is towards someone who is an empty well. Because if you keep expecting people to act a certain way toward you, especially if you treat them a certain way and they don't, then maybe it's time to move on, at least in your soul. One of the things that this can free us of are unhealthy relationships, abusive relationships, and sometimes even the parental things. Like if you have a parent that has never been able to give you what you wanted, I'm noticing, unless there's a little in here that I haven't seen, most of us are kind of beyond the age in which we expect something from our parents that we're not going to get. Just breathe a second, because y'all all quit breathing. Whether your parent is alive or not, that's one of our initial places where we get disappointed, no matter how good our parents were. But that's one of the places where we get disappointed, because our childish expectation is that they're going to give us everything we need. And if you are a parent or have acted as a parent, you know that you can't do that. So all of you who are fairly new parents, you're going to disappoint your kids. And they'll stand before a teacher one day who'll say, get over it. Get over it. Because that's how we mature in our spirituality. I just happened to look at Father Richard Rohr's reading today. And it's going to sound counterintuitive, but it was about our oneness in suffering. So just hang with me for a minute. I'm not alone in my tiredness or sickness or fears, but at one with millions of others for many centuries, and it is all part of life. And he talks about having a 15-year-old black lab who had cancer, and the dog knew many weeks before he did that she was ready to go. And she looked at him to let him know so. And it took a while for him to get it, that it was time. But the eyes that he saw in his dog were God's eyes, he says. And the sadness she expressed was a divine and universal sadness. When we carry our small suffering in solidarity with humanity's one universal longing for deep union, it helps keep us from self-pity or self-preoccupation. We know that we are all in this together. It is just as hard for everybody else, and our healing is bound up in each other's. Almost all people are carrying a great and secret hurt, even when they don't know it. This realization softens the space around our overly defended hearts. It makes it hard to be cruel to anyone. It somehow makes us one in a way that easy comfort and entertainment never can. Isn't that lovely to know that we can, when we're sad, suffering, hurting, that we're sharing something with the rest of our human brothers and sisters, and in this case, even our beloved friends from the animal kingdom. And so it's important that we have this generous demeanor about us. We were given that example. We were given that example of generosity in the life of Jesus, in the life of many great teachers. I saw it in the life of my granny. Granny wasn't perfect, but pretty darn near. She was a godly person who thought much more about others than she did about herself. Even when her body was failing her, she loved deeply and gave generously. And you know, I saw that look in her eyes when she was ready to go. I saw it. I didn't want to see it. I wanted to hold her here. And so I was pregnant with the boys when she passed. She was a twin. And I have a feeling that their souls and Granny's said hello as they passed by each other. So this idea of generosity is vital to us. It's vital for us to have our hearts wide open. Now, here's the thing. When your heart is wide open to be generous with others, it puts you in a space of vulnerability. Ruh-roh. But it's the best kind of vulnerability. It's the vulnerability that not only allows us to know the suffering of others, to share the suffering of others, it also allows us to share the joys of others. It allows us to be forgiving of others over and over and over again. Again, with boundaries. But one of the examples that I read about in the book is a woman who said, if I start feeling like somebody's driving me crazy, I need to look at me, not at the crazy person. I need to look at me because I have lost my generous nature when I'm there. They may be crazy. I mean, I've been crazy. Have you been crazy? If you have never, ever, ever been crazy, like not in your right mind, like emotionally stupid, if you've ever been, if never been in that spot, I want to see what your serenity looks like. Because we've all relied upon the generosity of others to forgive and understand and be with us in our crazy times, in our sad times, in our unknowing times. Let me tell you, I've talked about this before. We're having the deepest conversations around here these days. Deep conversations. And let me tell you what's amazing. When you walk into a difficult or uncomfortable conversation with another, and you have all those defenses up because you're pretty sure you're going to get hurt or you're going to hear something you don't want to hear, all of that stuff is brittle around you. And it's hard to hold on to that defense. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of energy. We think it's working, but it doesn't. What happens is when we soften our hearts to be with another, knowing that we are one people, those conversations become much easier. We can hear with the ears of our heart instead of hearing with the ears of our defensiveness, instead of hearing with the ears that make us want to fight back. Now, I'm not talking about spiritual work for sissies. I'm talking about the spiritual work of warriors. And it's important for us to be able to live with that paradox of our strength and our vulnerability, of being ferociously generous. But that's what we're up to. Yesterday, last night, we saw courage and healing and people being themselves and kids dressing however they wanted to and humans dressing however they wanted to. Kid had a hat. I wish
you
would have. It was so
unique.
Yeah. It was unique. It was beautifully weird. And Cindy's. And Cindy had a T-Rex with a rainbow. Yeah. So rawr. I'm more like this, yeah. You don't fool me, girl. You're not a T-Rex. You're all rainbow. Oh, and by the way, Drew and David, I have to let you know that my son David took home the Texas rainbow flag. I believe he co-opted that as his own now. So I'm just letting you know you may not see it again, if that's okay. I'm calling upon your generosity on behalf of my child, who is 22. So let's go back to that whole thing about are people really doing the best that they can? I'll just kind of rephrase what Brené Brown has said in work that she's done with people in corporations. She said that there's the, why, yes, I believe they are camp, and the heck no camp. They're not. And one of the people said, if this guy that's working for me is doing the best that he can, then I'm a jerk for acting the way I've acted. And I need to see if I can help him rather than judging him and being way less than generous with him. Man, we could say that about a lot of people, couldn't we, in our lives? If they're really doing the best they can, believe me, we can argue all day long that they could have done better. But if they could have, they would have. And it's true about us too. That's why forgiveness is such a big part of this. And that's why self-love is such a big part of this. And that's why knowing our oneness is such a big part of this. Because if we're all doing the very best we can at any given moment, then we have a different starting place for the conversation besides putting up our dukes and getting our feelings hurt. Yeah? And we have a different way to think about ourselves. Last week, somebody brought me a little bookmark with a quote from, who's this from? Swami Kripalu. Did I say that right? That's okay. When we judge ourselves, we break our own hearts. When we judge ourselves, we break our own hearts. I remember my mom saying to me one time, honey, why would you be so hard on something that God created? Is God that hard on you? I said, well, no. She said, you don't have any right to be. You don't have any right to be that hard on yourself. So if we need to lovingly step away from places that are harmful or abusive, if we need to step away from that, we do it with love, not just picking up our toys and leaving in a huff. We let ourselves step back with love. Because even Jesus said, as he sent the disciples out to do the work that they were going to do, that he expected them to do, he said, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Think about that. Wise as serpents. That's your heart mind. And innocent as doves. That's your heart mind too. So think about that. Because if we are innocent without wisdom, then it's easy for us to be a doormat. If we try to be wise without love, then we're hard and we're harsh. And we're probably judging ourselves much harder than we're judging other people. And that is a vicious cycle that we get into. So look at me. Keep your eyes open. Put your hand right here on your heart. Breathe into your hand. Stay out here with me. Keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open. Be brave. Keep your eyes open, because right now you're going to forgive yourself for all the things that you know and don't know need forgiving. You say, I forgive you. I forgive me. I forgive me. I was doing the best I could. I can do better, but I was doing the best that I could. And now keep your hand right there. And all the people that you've judged, treated harshly, you haven't healed yet your relationship with them, I forgive you. You were doing the best that you could. And I know this is so. And now we'll shut a breath out. This is how we get whole. We get whole because we're built to be generous. We're built to be generous with other people and built to be generous with ourselves. Somebody sent me this last week, a beautiful little picture. I didn't have time to run out and get a physical representation. This is Eeyore. Eeyore, the very sad donkey, Pooh's friend. The awesome thing about Eeyore is that even though he is basically clinically depressed, he still gets invited to participate in adventures and shenanigans with all his friends. They never expect him to pretend to feel happy. They never leave him behind or ask him to change. They just show him love. Wow. So whether you know an Eeyore, or you are an Eeyore, or if you go back and forth between those two things, know that you are just fine. You have the capacity to love and forgive. You have the capacity to do the very best that you can in even any given moment. And if you make a mistake, you back up gently and say, wow, I could have done that differently. And let me try it this way next time. Oh, I shouldn't have said those words. Let me go to that person and say, I'm taking those words back and I apologize for using them. Do you know that's a lot easier than saying, well, I was justified. They were acting like that, so I had to say those words to them. Yep, it was out of my control. I would call that inaccurate. One woman said, if it's true that my mother was doing the best that she could, I'd be grief-stricken. I'd rather be angry than sad. So it's easier to believe she's letting me down on purpose than to grieve the fact that my mother is never going to be who I need her to be. Wow. So just take a look in your life this week. This is your homework. Take a look in your life and see how automatically we move into ungenerosity. And catch yourself and just go, okay, if I were to act generous, what would it look like? What would the generous person do? And you breathe, and you do the best you can. And if you find yourself getting down on yourself, stop yourself in your own tracks. Wow, I'm being awfully harsh on myself. Did I know better? Yep, I probably did. Could I do it at that moment? Nope, I probably couldn't. Can I do it differently next time? Yes, I can. That's how we grow. That's how we get unstuck. That's how we remain malleable and fluid in our lives. That's how we stay connected to God and stay connected to other people, which is the same thing as staying connected to God. So if you're one who has trouble meditating or praying or has trouble with your concept of God, just look into the eyes of someone that you trust. Look into the eyes of someone with whom you can be generous and they can be generous with you. God's right there. That's where you can find God. Let's pray. Our prayer today comes from one of my favorite poets, an Irish poet, John O'Donohue, who passed from this life much too young in 2008. And so open your generous heart and hear these words in praise of the earth. Let us bless the imagination of the earth, that knew early the patience to harness the mind of time, waited for the seas to warm, ready to welcome the emergence of things dreaming of voyaging among the stillness of land. And how light knew to nurse the growth until the face of the earth brightened beneath a vision of color. When the ages of ice came and sealed the earth inside an endless coma of cold, the heart of the earth held hope, storing fragments of memory, ready for the return of the sun. Let us thank the earth that offers ground for home and holds our feet firm to walk in space open to infinite galaxies. Let us salute the silence and certainty of mountains, their sublime stillness, their dream-filled hearts. The wonder of a garden trusting the first warmth of spring until its black infinity of cells becomes charged with dream. Then the silent, slow nurture of the seed's self, coaxing it to trust the act of death. The humility of the earth that transfigures all that has fallen of outlived growth. The kindness of the earth opening to receive our worn forms into the final stillness. Let us ask forgiveness of the earth for all our sins against her, for our violence and poisonings of her beauty. Let us remember within us the ancient clay, holding the memory of seasons, the passion of the wind, the fluency of water, the warmth of fire, the quiver touch of the sun, and shadowed sureness of the moon. That we may awaken to live to the full the dream of the earth who chose us to emerge and incarnate its hidden night in mind, spirit, and light. Let your infinite self be wide awake and open this day. Let any hard walls around your heart fall away as if they are nothing. So that your generous spirit shines itself upon all. And in doing so, the face of the divine is revealed. We extend our blessing to everyone in this room, everyone in the world. To ourselves for all of our perfect imperfections. And above all, we give thanks for the creation of life itself, for the generosity that lives in us. And so it is. Amen.